back onto the exchange, where once we talked about improving roads and access to natural resources to improve life in rural areas, now we talk about things like increasing the speed of internet connections. So it is with some of the remote communities of the lower Klamath River Valley on the California side. The state teamed up with the Yurok and Karuk tribes to bring broadband internet to those communities. Eric Cutright is the Information Technology Director for the Karuk tribe and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Eric, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
So what is the general state of internet access in the communities to be served?
In most of these communities that we're working on in our project, there is no internet access except for dial-up or satellite. And when I say dial-up, most of these places you have to dial long distance to get on the internet, so you're paying long distance fees along with your dial-up fees.
Is it just because these are small communities and just kind of off the beaten path? I mean, what's the reason it's so slow getting there?
Well, I would agree with you that being small and off the beaten path, most of the larger phone companies or internet providers have decided there's no return on investment, so they've just passed these places by.
And how far back did the Karuk and the Yurok tribes join forces on the Klamath River Rural Broadband Initiative?
We started this project roughly 2 years ago.
And tell us about it.
Well, both the Karuk tribe and the Yurok tribe faced difficulties with broadband and internet access and even phone service and power service, utility services in general, on our lands and in our neighboring areas. This project was dreamed up because we wanted to see if we could provide the same service on the tribal land and in our communities that you get in Eureka or even in Sacramento or Medford.
And when you talk about that service, I mean, how big a difference are we talking about in internet connection speeds?
Well, there's a difference in speeds and there's a difference in price. Right now, as I said, you can only get dial-up, which I don't want to get too technical, but you know, normally that goes to a maximum of what they call 56 kilobits per second.
Oh, I remember that with the old high-speed modems were 56 kilobits per second, right?
Right. The speeds that we're going to be offering are up to residential 6 megabits per second. Now, if you put that back into kilobits per second, that's 6,000 kilobits per second, which is a very significant increase.
More than 10 times faster than what you had before at its best.
Yeah, closer to 100.
Okay, that is a big deal. So how much work did it take to land the grant? And tell us about this process that the state of California goes through with the California Advanced Services Fund.
Well, the California Advanced Services Fund in this latest round, it's actually been a fund that's been around since roughly 2005, issued by the California Congress to, they call it, bridge the digital divide, to bring those communities that have been left behind forward. We started our application process at the beginning of 2012, and the application was due on February 1st of 2013, and we got it in the day before the deadline. So we spent about a year preparing our application, which was driving the route, visiting these communities, finding out what their needs actually are, and then working up a plan that we thought we could provide that access, not only to build it, which is a very large construction project, but also to sustain it once it's in and to become the prominent internet provider in that area.
Eric Cutright, what communities are we talking about here, just for the benefit of the folks who are still kind of wondering where we're talking about?
Absolutely. We're following the Klamath River from when it enters Humboldt County near Orleans, California, which is our first community, down southwest as the Klamath River heads. It goes into the community of Wichpec, which is the beginning of the Yurok Reservation. The Klamath River follows then a northwestern path and it visits the communities of Watek and Johnson's, also on the Yurok Reservation. And then from that point, we're going to take a slightly varied route. We're not going to follow the river. We're going to go over Bald Hills Road and the Redwood National Park and meet the Klamath where it hits the ocean in Orrick, California.
And none of these communities are more than, what, a few hundred people?
Well, we estimate in the whole region there's roughly 600 households that we're going to serve.
Mm-hmm. And all right, we're talking to Eric Cutright, who is the Information Technology Director for the Karuk Tribe, about bringing broadband to communities in rural Northern California. through the offices of the California Advanced Services Fund in cooperation with the Karuk and Yurok tribes. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email jx@jeffnet.org. So, Eric, you mentioned it's a major construction project. What, I mean, for the benefit of folks who've never seen broadband service come into an area, what physically has to be done?
Well, the major part of our project is running a fiber optic cable, and we're actually linking two existing internet providers so that we can have two different sources of internet, one on each end. On the eastern end, near Orleans, California, the Karuk tribe is meeting with Siskiyou Telephone, which is a provider that covers most of western Siskiyou County, and we're going to tie in a new fiber optic cable to their existing fiber optic cable. We're then going to run that fiber optic cable 82 miles along the route I previously mentioned out until we reach the California coast and down to a place called Big Lagoon, where we're meeting a provider known as Suddenlink. It's a cable company, and they also have fiber optic there that heads down to Eureka. Fiber optic cable, it's a small cable, and it uses light signals to transmit internet access.
And how big a trench or ditch or whatever it is you do you have to make to fit a fiber optic cable?
Well, the technology is based more on legal problems than it is on how big you have to make the trench. In some areas, we have to build a normal trench where you dig it out with a backhoe, so you get, 1 to 2 feet wide. In other areas, we can use a new technology called micro-trenching, where we get a trench that's only maybe 2 inches wide. And we much prefer that because it's a much smaller environmental impact and it's much faster to install. But because it's new, not all agencies allow it on their land.
Really? And are we talking about the national parks, for example?
National parks, the California Transit Authority, Humboldt County. There's a lot of authorities. We've identified over 12 different agencies that we have to receive permission from to do this project.
Wow. And does this also require an environmental report under California Environmental Quality Act or a federal environmental assessment or something?
It does. The CEQA, the California Environmental Act, and NEPA, the National Environmental Protection Act, both of them require reports, as well as cultural reports from the tribes in the region. So there's a national and a state cultural report to make sure that you're not damaging any cultural artifacts or other cultural important sites.
I think I'm understanding why the grant arrived a day before the deadline. This is a lot of work to get just the paperwork in order.
It's a very large work. I mean, we put in over a year of work just to put in the application, and we've been working with the California State Public Utility Commission since roughly April, and we were awarded on October 17th. So, I don't know, another 6 months of what they call due diligence, where they ask us questions and we modify our application to make it better and to make sure that it's going to work if we get funded.
And so I understand the funding is a little more than $6.6 million, is that right?
That is correct.
And so when can the work potentially begin?
The work has already begun.
Mm-hmm.
We are bringing out our engineers either next week or the week after. They're going to drive the route. We're going to find everywhere that we want to install that fiber optic cable. We're also going to locate locations for communications towers, or if there are existing communications towers, so that we can share that internet signal to customers throughout the region wirelessly.
I noticed that we were talking about the California Advanced Services Fund, which its original funding was $100 million and increased to a total of $225 million as of 2010. Looks like Governor Brown signed a bill in early October that expanded it by another $90 million. So this is really a big deal. How much competition was there to land just the $6.6 million that the tribes will be using to provide this broadband service?
The California Advanced Services Fund has been growing, and during its initial period, it didn't have very many applicants, but they've been changing the rules to make it more and more useful to the state. When we applied on February 1st, we were one of 33 applicants, and as far as I know, 29 of those applicants are funded or are still in the running, and we were in the first five.
All right, so it's your competition for sure, but it sounds like most people get funded. But given the size of the fund, certainly over the years, it's certainly entirely possible. Eric Cutright, when you plan a system like this, given how fast technology changes, do you really have to reach for what is the best stuff at that moment in the hope that it doesn't get left behind technologically 5 or 15 years down the road?
You do, and that's why we wanted to go with fiber optic cable. There's a lot of companies and vendors and providers that will want to offer you just wireless service, you know, not just wireless to your home, but wireless to your community. And that technology currently has a very low threshold. So if you accept that, you might get some internet service, but it's going to be obsolete very quickly. Right now, fiber optic cable, that technology is progressing very quickly, and it just requires better equipment on either end, which is coming out all the time, to speed it up, so that we believe that this project is going to be very future-proof for quite a few years.
And what will be the actual end use then? I mean, what are the logical? We're not just talking about people surfing the internet, but there are some real decent business applications and community applications for broadband service, correct?
Absolutely. You know, we have community computer centers where students come in and, you know, they can play games, but we're also offering that as a free service to the community. We have students that are taking college classes online that currently they drive 50 or 100 miles just to reach an internet connection. We have medical facilities that wish to do telemedicine so that they don't have to drive down to Sacramento or up to Medford just to see a doctor or a specialist. We have public safety agencies, fire and police especially the firefighters. There's a lot of firefighters out here, both urban and rural. And for them to stay in contact with each other during an emergency is vital, and this project is going to help them do that.
And you said college students have to drive how many miles to get a high-speed internet connection?
Well, it depends on where they start, but we have students that drive over 100 miles to get onto a public access computer just to take their college classes.
Wow.
That's one way.
All right, so we can certainly see the difference that this is going to make. And so when is the cable supposed to be ready to go and everything up and running?
We're attempting to complete the project within 2 years, which is the grant deadline that we were given. It's going to be a very tight timeline. We expect the construction phase to take roughly 7 months, so we're going to try to get everything in order, all our paperwork and all our permits, by the beginning of 2015, by the end of winter there, and start building in the first thaw in the spring.
All right. You heard about it here on the Jefferson Exchange, the Klamath River Rural Broadband Initiative, working with $6.6 million from the California Advanced Services Fund on behalf of the Karuk and Yurok tribes. Eric Cutright is the Information Technology Director for the Karuk tribe. Eric, thanks so much for joining us on the Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.
You bet. Bottom of the hour here on the Exchange. Vents Day coming. Here's Garrison.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 30th of October 2013. It was on this day, 1938, a cylindrical Martian spaceship landed in Grover's Mill, New Jersey, and began incinerating onlookers with an alien heat ray, an event that was covered by the Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations and caused mass hysteria in the East. Of course, it was a hoax. It was a radio play based on the H.G. Wells novel The War of the Worlds, presented by Orson Welles, the Mercury Theater of the Air. At the beginning of the broadcast, there was an announcement that what followed was a dramatic presentation was fiction, but many listeners missed the introduction and there was general panic, especially in New Jersey. It was estimated that of the 6 million people who heard that broadcast, about 1.5 million believed that it was true, and more than 1 million others were genuinely terrified. It's the birthday of the poet and critic Ezra Pound, born Haley, Idaho, 1885, championed the modernist movement and encouraged many writers, William Butler Yeats and Robert Frost, William Carlos Williams, Marianne Moore, James Joyce, Ernest Hemingway, and T.S. Eliot. It was Ezra Pound who edited T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland and cut about half of it out. It's the birthday of the journalist Robert Caro, born in New York City, 1936, who has spent the last 30 years writing a 4-volume biography of Lyndon Johnson. It's the birthday of the second president of the United States, John Adams, Quincy, Massachusetts, 1735. John Adams, who said, "Democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There was never a democracy that did not commit suicide." It's the birthday of Fred W. Friendly, born Ferdinand Friendly Wackenheimer in New York City, 1915. Went to work for CBS Radio and there met Edward R. Murrow, whose producer Friendly became. They did a number of news documentaries together for CBS News, where Fred W. Friendly resigned in protest in 1966 when CBS scrapped a hearing on Vietnam so they could run a rerun of I Love Lucy. Here's a poem for today by Joyce Sutphen, These Few Precepts, for Marna. I said to her, don't leave your life scattered in boxes across the country. Don't slip away without tying down the hatch. Don't walk a mile out of your way to avoid a crack. Don't worry about breaking your mother's back. I'm sorry, I said, that I was stupid when I married. I'm sorry I chose for right instead of love, for truth instead of beauty. They aren't always the same thing, you know, despite what Keats said. Don't try to do it all alone, and if you fail, think of how well you failed and how all you really need is a good view of the sky or a bit of something, a flower petal or speckled stone, held close enough for the eye to drink it in. And remember, I said, I'll always love you, no matter what. A poem by Joyce Sutphen, These Few Precepts, from her collection First Words, published by Red Dragonfly Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Garrison Keillor here on the Jefferson Exchange with today's edition of the Writer's Almanac. Every day we're on the air, the Writer's Almanac is here with us. Every Wednesday on the Jefferson Exchange, at this time, we provide our Vents Day segment, your chance to vent your spleen politely on a couple of topics in the news. This week's topics, the income gap and how to close it, and if we legalize marijuana in our states, how do we go about that? What would be the concepts within those laws? Join us on the Exchange on Vents Day, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. The income gap discussion comes with some new fuel. A recent report from Oregon's Office of Economic Analysis that shows where the job losses hit the hardest in the recent recession, right smack in the middle. Through recession and recovery, upper-income workers expanded their ranks, and the lowest-paid workers did as well. The middle-income groups did not recover in numbers. More evidence of job creation at the top and the bottom of the income scale. All this comes as the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, considers rules to link CEO pay in corporations to the median income of workers for that corporation. That ratio now, about 350 to 1, meaning the top boss makes 350 times what the median worker makes. Let's hear what you think. What is a good ratio of CEO to worker pay? Is there a number or mechanism you'd like to implement to make sure that one stays geared to the other? More broadly, what can or should be done to help the middle class grow again? Join us on this Vents Day, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Yes, all the phone lines work. Our Rogue Valley number, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Topic two on this Vents Day is marijuana for personal use. The states of Washington and Colorado voted themselves into such laws last fall. Oregon and California so far have not, but both will almost certainly vote again. The group New Approach Oregon filed its proposal for a vote on legal pot in November 2014, assuming the group collects enough signatures. That is not the only effort in Oregon. Other groups are talking about filing measures of their own. This comes as a Gallup poll showed an outright majority of Americans, this is across the country, obviously, favoring legal marijuana use. That's a first. The first time there's been an outright majority favoring legal marijuana use. This is a big first, too. with the margin 58% in favor, 39% opposed. Certainly, there are lots of ways to make marijuana legal for personal use. How would you set up a law allowing personal growing and use of marijuana? For example, would it be regulated by the people who regulate liquor in our states right now? Or would you just lose the growing part and just allow possession and use? And if that was the case, how much? Design your own marijuana law is what we're talking about on the Jefferson Exchange today. Or talk about the income gap and how we address the great disparity between the people at the upper end of the income scale and the lower end of the income scale. Call us on Vents Day, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or email us at jx@jeffnet.org. This is Vents Day, back with your calls in 1 minute.